Storyworthy Media, the best in story-driven content.
Hi, it's Julie Gardner from ObscureDesigns.net, and you're listening to Storyworthy.
Welcome to the Storyworthy Podcast. Here are your hosts, Christine Blackburn and Hannes Finn.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm here with
Hannes Finney, and we're coming to you from the Comedy Cellar in Madison, Wisconsin.
What are we doing here?
Well, first of all, we had to go back in time because the building is burned down.
Oh, great.
Our subject today, pursuing your passion.
Pursuing your passion. Oh, I know where you're going.
And the Comedy Cellar in Madison, Wisconsin is the first place I really seriously started to pursue my passion of making the public who I hate laugh.
No, that's interesting. So when you were in college, that's when you
started,
were like 19.
I did 2 years in Milwaukee. I did 2 years. It sounds like prison. I did 2 years at the University of Milwaukee, and then I went to Madison. So anyhow, I was probably about 21, and I was starting to do stand up. There was stand up doing, you know, around town, but all of a sudden an actual comedy club opened like a block from my house.
Yes,
which I took as a sign that show business is easy if you just put it out there. And it was owned by Bill Kinison, Sam Kinison's brother and manager.
Yes, you've told this story before.
I know, but no one was listening then, and I'm telling them again
now. No, but it is interesting that you started pursuing your passion at a relatively young age. I mean, you're fortunate that you knew you wanted to do that. You knew you wanted to be a comedian.
Yeah, I thought I wanted to be a film director up until comedy swept the nation. I went, oh, I can do that because, like, I don't have to like get a whole bunch of people together. It can just be me.
Mm.
And I'm not, you know, I'm not good with people now. I was worse with people then.
I see.
So I could just show up, tell jokes, and leave.
But it's pretty encouraging that even at 19 or 20, you knew you wanted to do that and you started to do that. I mean, it's pretty good.
It was cool. I mean, I'm horrified to think of what I must have been saying, what I thought were jokes.
Yeah.
And like I remember,
but you even knew it was feasible. That's pretty exciting.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And it was in the basement. It was in the basement area of a bar that was sleazy as hell.
Yeah.
Which is probably why the building burned down eventually. And so here we are at the ground zero.
So that's
of
why Hannes we're here.
Finney, you might say.
All right, you guys. We have a very interesting guest here today. I'm so excited to have her on the show. Her name is Julie Gardner, and I met her just recently. I was in Malibu with a friend having breakfast, and
I was in Malibu.
Oh my God! What am I supposed to say?
You're supposed to say I was driving to Victorville. And I stopped at the pastrami burger place.
Who cares?
I know.
You're either in Malibu.
I've been to Malibu many times.
If I was in Hollywood, you would say the same thing. And Hollywood is shit. Do you know what I'm saying?
Right.
I was in
Glendora. No, everybody's like, Yeah, I totally believe you were in Glendora.
The point
eating.
Is, yes. We're going to a restaurant. We put our name in because they're going to call the name when our table's ready.
They're going to call your name.
I'm waiting outside and I hear music wafting next door.
Ooh.
And what do I hear? What is the song I hear wafting next door? It's like my favorite song of all time. I named my daughter after this song.
Oh.
Alabama. And it's a Neil Young song. And when you hear that, it's like, you know, your ears perk up because you don't hear it often. It's an obscure song from like 1970.
Oh, this was live or this was 69. A recording of the song?
No, it was the recording.
Okay.
And the point is I wandered in and then what to my wandering eyes should appear but these amazing, beautiful works of art, murals of Neil Young. And then I meet Julie Gardner, and she is
Neil
the photographer
Young,
and the artist.
Your boyfriend, when Rafael Nadal is out of town.
Is unavailable.
Yes,
right.
Exactly.
When my boyfriend, Rafael Nadal, is out of town, my go-to
is
Neil Young.
What's the name of this restaurant? We don't have to keep that.
The restaurant. I don't know. Who cares? That's not the point.
I told him what? People want to go see these murals.
No. Well, she was just doing an exhibit for a period of time.
Okay, never mind.
The point is Julie Gardner. She's fantastic. You can look at her designs right now, you guys. Head over to obscuredesigns.net. But anyway, there they were in front of me. And what she does is she photographs musicians. This in this case was Neil Young, and then she puts the images on these beautiful silk scarves. And I mean, this isn't like this isn't like polyester scarves. Do you know what I mean? This isn't like,
well,
these
of course
are like
not. It's Malibu. They don't allow polyester in there.
Exquisite materials, fine, fine pieces of art. And you can hang them up on the wall. You can wear them. And anyway, the point is, it clearly caught my eye.
Yeah.
And then I started looking into Julie Gardner, and she's fascinating. She's absolutely fascinating. So here she is on the show. And I have to say, Hannes, it's mm-hmm. it's refreshing.
Is it?
To not always have comedians and writers. Don't get me wrong. I love comedians. I love writers.
No, comedians are the worst. Let's face facts. They're horrible people.
That's not true.
Horrible, selfish,
absolutely
disgusting
not true.
People.
The point is, this
God.
Is kind of interesting. I love it. You remember we've had like a composer on the show? That was interesting.
We had some animation guys.
A couple of neuroscientists. I mean, so we like to mix it up.
I love the fact that we've had two neuroscientists.
No, we've had three. We've had three neuroscientists. The point is, we like to mix it up on Storyworthy, and tonight is no exception.
Yeah, the last one, he would take images of brains and put them on polyester scarves. And he would sell them in Pomona out of a truck in the
Listen,
back.
Listen, pursuing your passion, this is what I wanted to get to.
Yes.
My God, Julie Gardner, is she speaking to me or is she speaking to me?
She's speaking
my
to half
book,
of L.A., right?
Pit to LAX, My Storyworthy Life, which just came out in March of this year, is all about pursuing my passion.
Your passion of shoehorning your advertising your book into every possible way? Yes.
And it's available on Amazon Kindle and, of course, the audiobook.
You can go through the Amazon banner at storyworthypodcast.com.
We're whores. No, but this is exactly what this
If we were whores, we'd
about.
Have money.
Pursuing your passion, exactly. It's yes. In other words, I would rather be doing coin laundry in Los Angeles in an apartment
right.
than living, and having a right. podcast that makes some
everybody
money
who lives
than living in a really big house in Pittsburgh with three
everybody
garages.
Everybody who lives in L.A. from somewhere else will occasionally on the interweb, see something where it's like, for what I'm paying now, I could be living in a lakeside four-bedroom mansion.
Right.
But I could go outside 2 months out of the year, and the rest of the year, it's just snow and horror.
Oh, no, but it's true. So. So I've been in L.A. for 18 years now, and sometimes when I go back east and visit my family, I do admire and I look at their things, and I think, like, shit, man, there's a lot of things going on, and I could do this, but then I would be there in a suburb of Pittsburgh and not, what I mean?
Then you'd need a lot of things to make you happy. Cause
so I don't have a lot of things, but I'm definitely pursuing my passion, and I love being in Los Angeles. And anyway, this book, Pit to LAX, My Story with the Life, is why did it take me so goddamn long? So I'm anxious to hear Julie's story, because we're going to find out how long it took her.
Okay. This is fantastic. Isn't she originally from...
She's English or Australian. It's one or the other. The accent, it comes and it goes and it's back and forth. I'm just not sure.
Wow. Are you saying she's a fake? She's really from Iowa, isn't she? She's completely pretending to be from another continent. I see what's happening.
Before we bring on our storyteller tonight, I did want to mention that if you'd like to support the Storyworthy podcast, that would be great. Here's what you do.
Well, number one, just tell your friends to start listening to us.
That's
we need
easy.
Numbers.
Yeah.
Numbers, people. Downloads.
That's easy. And you can also follow us, of course, on Twitter at Storyworthy, on Instagram at Storyworthy, and head over to our Facebook page if you want. But you don't have to do the Facebook thing. I don't want to push that.
Why not?
I mean,
you're saying Facebook
it.
Is dead? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I don't think it's dead.
It's dying?
Just, no. Okay, you guys.
No,
head
you
over
know what?
Facebook
is not dying.
Down.
It's just aging rapidly.
That's right.
Into all of your aunts and uncles are on Facebook now.
You can also listen to us on SoundCloud, Stitcher, and iTunes, and subscribe to us. Why not? That's always fun.
Subscribe on iTunes, exactly. And you could even, if you were crazy and lived in some place like, I don't know, Malibu. You could give us money. You could go on our patreon.com/storyworthy.
That's
and
a nice
actually,
way. Yeah.
People actually give us money on a monthly basis.
Ongoing support.
$2, $3, $5, it's $10, $20. There's one person gives $100,000 a month. I'm kidding. If somebody gave us $100,000, you'd never hear from us again.
Ever.
If somebody said, stop doing the show, I'll give you $1 million, like, I would just nod. Like, I'm not even going to speak now to get the money.
All right, you guys, hang tight wherever you are, because Julie Gardner is on her way here. Next time on Storyworthy, we have writer-comedian Susanna Brisk.
And I'll be talking about how I became a sexual intuitive.
That's next time on Storyworthy. Hey, Christine. tell everybody about our social media consulting business.
Well, Hannes, we have learned so much over the last 5 years doing Storyworthy about social media, and we've had so many guests on the show that have given us their tips and ideas.
Yeah.
And so now we are sharing our experience with others. We've started a new social media consulting business, and if you email us at info@storyworthypodcast.com, I'll be happy to fill you in on exactly what we're able to do for you.
Yeah, we can increase your social media footprint.
Exactly.
Footprint.
Exactly.
Footprint.
Again, email us over at info@storyworthypodcast.com, and I'll be happy to email you a rate sheet.
Hey, everyone. I'm Matt Knutson, actor, comedian, attentive listener, and you are listening to Storyworthy.
And we're back. We are currently at the NBC Studios in Burbank.
Where we moved from Wisconsin to Burbank?
Well, we moved on to another area of pursuing your passion.
Oh, I see.
Where I did fulfilled a childhood dream of doing several sketch items on The Tonight Show. It was with Jay Leno, but still, it was The Tonight Show, and it was in NBC at the proper studio, which, by the way, you know, they're totally abandoning that studio.
Yeah, I know. I think it's going to be condos now.
It's very upsetting that they're going to tear down
the
studio.
You and I, we've known each other for 18 years. And I think one of the reasons why we became such good friends is because we are both pursuing our passions.
That's true.
Albeit, you know, broke and slightly homeless.
The idea is pursuing.
Pursuing.
Still in pursuit. It's in front of us.
Right.
You see, sometimes our passion will turn around and give us the finger as it runs ahead.
No, but it's nice that you do form a new kind of family when you come out to L.A. You find people who are like-minded, and they become your family.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I've known people that, you know, forever, and it's like they've never gotten what I want to do. They literally just don't. It's like, well, no, I'm in, you know, but what are you doing? You're telling jokes, or you want to act, or you want to. It's like, I'm in show business. I like all of this. I'm doing all of this. And they're like, yeah, but then what do you, like, the end game,
you know,
is
what?
Doing
it's
it.
It's so true. And when I go back to Pittsburgh, when I look around and I hear the conversations, and with my family, everybody's there, it occurs to me that they never think about me. You know what I mean? Like, in other words, like, my world is completely alien.
They're just waiting for you to come to your senses and come back and work at the Waffle House.
It's totally alien to them that I would pursue this sort of career. It's interesting.
Right. And that if you're not at, you know, if you're not literally famous, why would you still be in show business?
I mean, they're getting it more and more, and they're supportive. But yeah, it's like when you go back east and somebody says, well, you know, have you been on, The Tonight Show? Have you been on Kimmel? And it's like, well, it's not. There's levels of success.
Yeah, I've had people, I was like, yeah, I've been on The Tonight Show. I did several sketches, and they're like, oh, you weren't a guest? Like, what was the last time you did a sketch on The Tonight Show, Big Shot? What the fuck?
All right, you guys, she's here right now, Julie Gardner. She's a talented producer of live music shoots, and she's a studio engineer and a photographer and a designer. What does that mean? What does all of that mean,
Hannes? She's a hyphenite.
Let me tell you
what
it means. She's
got many things.
Here's one thing she does. She tours around the world, like I said, with musicians, and she photographs them. Then she projects the images onto exquisite fabrics to create these luxury scarves and design, and it's artwork, and you can wear it, and it's fabulous, and you can find
all
of this.
You can wrap Neil Young around your body. Is that what you're saying?
This is exactly what I'm saying. You can find her over at obscuradesigns.net and also on Instagram at obscuradesigns and on Twitter at obscuradesigns. All right, you guys, wherever you are, put your hands together for Julie Gardner.
Okay, so I wanted to talk today about my passion, or how I found my passion, and where that journey that it's taken me onto, where I've been. And to clear up something, first of all, I am Australian. I come from Western Australia, but I'm also now British, so I'm a dual citizen, because I lived in England Britain for 25 years, so I became British. A comment also. Hannes just said that he found his passion when he was 19 and 20. I never knew what I wanted to do when I was that age. I had no idea. So I kind of messed around for a bit. All my friends were going to teachers' college, so I decided that's a good idea. I'll go and do that too. Became a teacher. I hated it. I did it for like 3 years full time. And then I decided to go to England. My boyfriend at that time decided to come to Italy for a year. So I came and met him. First place I landed was London. And as soon as I got there, something in me just, it was like, I have to be here. So I went back to Australia for a year. I sold everything in that. In the meantime, I gave up teaching. Well, my parents were horrified. I went to England. I didn't know anyone there. And then I ended up staying there for 3 years, and I did various things, messed around, went around the Europe and England, you know, as a backpacker, as all great Australians do. Then I did things like I taught for a bit, and I learned how to print. Traditionally, I did typography at the London School of Print. I joined an anarchist print shop, and they showed me how to print traditionally, and I did that for about 9 months. So I was making books. And so anyway, then I thought, I don't want to do this. I went back to Australia. And I went to visit my elder sister, who was living in Queensland, who's a natural therapist and has a very alternative lifestyle. She's a healer. She cured her daughter of leukemia. So her husband told me to go and sit under a tree because I didn't know what I wanted to do. And at this time, I was about 26, 27. Told me to sit under a tree and to think about it, and it would come. And he showed me the direction that I had to point myself at. So I sat under the tree. I sat under the tree for about 2 days with, you know, taking a break and going back inside, obviously, and going to sleep. And I came up with the idea that I really wanted to work in music. And so I went off to Sydney, and I went around to all the record companies. I decided I wanted to be an A&R person. Went around to all the record companies. They didn't want to have anything to do with me. And finally, I got a call from Rhinoceros Studios, which was in Excess's studio, to come in and be their runner for the day. And now let me back up to where I started and how I started, because this kind of, I've had people say to me, oh, wow, you're so, it's so amazing that you've got into music business. How could you do that? How did you do that? And most people come, well, first of all, I was doing this in the 80s. So most of the people were guys. All the people were guys. Mm-hmm. So, and they also had their own home studios at home, and they were playing with things, you know, with music and sound and, you know, equipment from the year dot. I came from a large farm in Western Australia, which was completely isolated. We didn't have neighbors. I had to learn to drive when I was like 10 years old to drive my little sister and I up to the bus stop, which was 3 kilometers away. So by the time I was 12, I had my own car. I was so small, I had to have cushions behind me and underneath me so I could reach the steering wheel and see over the top. But I used to drive us up to the bus stop, leave the car there all day and would get picked up by the bus and go to school and then drive it back home again. My dad was a sheep farmer and a wheat farmer as well. We had 3,000 acres, and so by the time I was 12, I could run a farm. I knew everything to do with farms, so I could run all the sheep. I harvested, I ploughed the field, paddocks. We call it paddocks in Australia. So I did all that. That's where I came from. It certainly didn't have anything to do with music. It didn't have anything to do with electronics. It didn't have anything to do with anything. Then all of a sudden, I find myself in Sydney. I find myself at Rhinoceros Studios after, you know, being rejected by every record company in Sydney, you know, trying to be an A&R person or secretary for an A&R person. So I go in there. I didn't know a thing. I mean, someone told me to change a light bulb, and I put my finger in there and almost electrocuted myself. So I didn't know anything. Finally, I realized that I thought it was an amazing thing. So after one day of running around, doing whatever they told me to do, I stayed there, probably to their horror, because they didn't want women and I was too old. So I just stuck. I ended up working with them for 10 months for free because they didn't want me. And I realized that I wanted them. And then the guy that was showing me, he'd been there for 3 years. He was an amazing, he came from the Navy, so he knew electronics. He was just this incredible engineer. But he was classified as an assistant at that stage. He was showing me how to do everything. And I realized that I had to learn incredibly fast. And so coming from a background where I didn't know any technical I didn't know how to use any machines. Like, we had tape recording machines at that stage, and it was also starting to be digital, but it was digital tape recording machines, 48 track, 32 tracks. So I had to learn like microphones, where to place them, how they worked, the signal path. But I realized I had to learn this really fast because these people didn't want me in the studios. So I found a technique in my head. I just like, boom, worked out how to do that. And so within this 10-month period, I learned so fast that they sacked the guy who'd been there for 3 years and gave me his job, which was really unfortunate because he was my friend. So I'm going to tell you how I actually did this to learn really incredibly fast. I realized that a child never questions anything. And when I first came into the studios, I was like, oh my God, I can't do that. How do you do that? I totally don't understand it. So I stopped doing that, oh my God, I don't understand. And I just let myself be like a child and absorbed everything and didn't question it. Just absorbed it, looked, watched, and did it just like a child. And that's how I was able to just learn incredibly fast. And yeah, then became an engineer within that 10-month period. So anyway, from the studios, that's where I found my passions. So what I'm trying to say is I worked incredibly hard. I did all these amazing things, but I was so passionate about it that I was able to do it.
I got some questions. I'm up first, Hannes.
Oh, no, you're all over the music.
I'm all over the music. What kind of music did you listen to growing up? What kind of music did you even get in Western Australia? It was the radio, I'm assuming.
No, my dad loved singing, and he loved country music.
American country music.
Yeah, Johnny Cash.
Oh, yeah.
But real country music.
Yeah. No, that's good stuff. Yeah,
not this pop BS they're making nowadays. These darn kids today.
No,
yeah,
no,
Johnny
okay.
Cash, Merle Haggard.
Did he have any instruments? Did he play an instrument?
No, but he used to love singing. And my dad had a really great voice.
And your mother as well?
No.
Really? No, it's just interesting. That's not much of a musical background. I thought you might have said that.
No.
Do you have older brothers and sisters?
I have four sisters.
I have four sisters. Mm-hmm. Isn't that interesting? And I have one brother as well.
Right.
But my older brothers and sisters were you know, because I'm the youngest of six, and they were all about the Beatles and Neil Diamond and the Monkees and, you know, the Carpenters and all of that early, late 60s, early 70s music, which is where I fell in love with Neil Young, Crosby, Stills, Nash, all of that, Buffalo Springfield, because that's what they were listening to. So it's interesting that you didn't really have that.
Well, I did. My elder sisters were a lot older than me. And so they went to Perth to go to boarding school, and they listened to Led Zeppelin and Deep Purple.
Okay,
and,
so you did have that. Okay, right. Because my brother was a big Led Zeppelin fan, so we had that as well. And so the thing about pursuing your passion, what I'm hearing from you, is that, you know, it does sound like a fabulous life. And people do hear, you know, these names that you're dropping. I mean, these are amazing musicians and amazing artists. And people think like, well, who wouldn't want to be awake 7 days a week all night long if I'm with those people? I mean, if Jamiroquai is in the other room, I don't mind staying awake. You know, so they do feel that way. But what you're not saying is that in order to do that, you have to give up a lot of other things.
Yeah. So I've given up, okay, my country, my family, having a proper full-time relationship. I gave up everything.
Wow, Julie.
I gave up everything.
That is so honest. Do you have children?
No.
It's very honest. So you have done all these things, but there's another side to it.
Completely.
Yeah, and like people don't, like you said, about the amount of hours that you're working, people are like, oh, being on TV is awesome. It's like TV is like that too. You're spending 10, 12, 14 hours a day. You know, you go home, you sleep, you get up and you go back and do it again. You're not doing anything else.
And you start, if you try and make plans, you always end up having to blow them out. So you don't have friends because you can't.
It's almost like being on a TV series or a movie set where you know you're going in the studio with these people and you just have to block away that time, all of it. And that's it. That's where your life is going to be.
And what I loved about that is it became a family. So you were all doing this crazy thing. The outside world didn't matter anymore. You were all a big family and you just related like that. And that's why I love touring as well.
And so I want to talk a little bit more about that. Wow, I have so many questions for you. I really do. I can't believe you did the Cranberries' No Need to Argue. That was the best album, man. I mean, it's still, it completely holds up.
Yeah.
Completely holds up. Fantastic. Okay, so let's talk about the touring, because I didn't want to get to you meeting Elliot Roberts, who was Neil Young's manager. He's the one who came out the other day, you know, and said that Neil Young did not authorize Donald Trump to use his song, which was so funny because, of course, he chooses the song that is the antithesis of the message
he would want.
But this is such just as a sidebar, it's a consistent thing with conservative politicians to not have any idea, like, okay, Scott Walker is the governor of Wisconsin, my beloved home state, and he is a douchebag of biblical proportions. Mm-hmm. He's destroying my beloved home state. And he's running for president. And he played – his song was from the Dropkick Murphys, who are like nice liberal Irish boys from Boston. And then they're like, fuck you. Don't fucking play our song. Yeah. And back in the 80s, Reagan used Springsteen's Born in the USA.
Did
you listen to any of the words
lyrics
in the song?
Yeah.
It's not, it's ironically happy but born in the USA, not like, oh, America's fantastic, I love Ronald Reagan. That's not the point of Springsteen. And what about these, you know, their complete tone deafness?
Well,
to
it's
knowing.
Very frustrating to also think.
Neil Young is so famous and has been around for so long. How could you possibly think, if you're Donald Trump, you know who I bet would support me?
No, he knew it before he ever played that song. He knew he would be into trouble, but he also knew Neil Young is always trending. And so he's thinking, I know I'm going to get more press out of this. And in fact, he did.
Yeah, that's true.
But actually, Neil wrote a comment on his Facebook page, and I think Elliot told me he got like 11 million likes or something.
Yeah, sure.
And it was a response to that Donald Trump. So if anyone wants to read that,
What does it say? What did he say? Can you read it to us?
Oh, no, it's like huge.
Oh, I see.
Yeah,
okay.
But if anyone wants to see it, it's on Neil Young's Facebook page.
Fantastic.
How could we possibly find that through the interweb?
Okay, tell me about meeting Elliot Roberts.
So I met Elliot Roberts in 2008. I was going into live venues, filming bands, and then coming back and recording the audio, coming back to our own studios and doing all post-production. So I had a director and editor who did the visual, and I did all the audio.
So you're hiring crews of 20 people to cover these things.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, this is huge.
Some of the shows that I did, so it was all multi-camera. So some of the shows I would have 65 people.
Wow. How exciting, Julie.
Oh, yeah.
That's so exciting. Were you a good boss? Are you a nice boss?
Oh, I'm a great boss.
Are you?
And I always pay on time. I hate being a freelance person where you have to wait 3 months.
Well, you know.
That's just ridiculous.
Right, and you know because you came up from in all these studios and you've worked those hours and you know.
Yeah.
See, this is the exciting part about pursuing your passion. You started at a young age and now you're able to turn it around and give back.
Yeah, yeah.
I just throw that in. So go ahead. You were with Elliot Roberts.
I came over. I met Elliot Roberts. I went around, took meetings in LA and then New York. Elliot was my last meeting in LA. And he gave me Stephen Stills Live at Shepherd's Bush DVD to do. So we went and filmed it.
Wow. He just gave you that project?
Yeah.
You must have been so thrilled.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
God.
And we bought Warner's. So that was Warner's record. They told me that I'd brought it in on time. I was one of the first producers that brought it in on time, on budget, and it did incredibly well. So Elliot and I got on really well, and then after that, that's how I started going out on tour with Neil Young.
What was the first tour with Neil Young?
I guess I started going out in 2009. I can't remember exactly, but the first lot of tours that I started going out on with, it was either end of 2009, 2010, and that was all around the East Coast of America.
Yeah. What, were you replacing somebody or did they just needed
a
new person?
So I'd been out on tour with Chrissy Hynde and the Pretenders 3 times. I've been out with Joe Jackson.
Tell you, in college, I had a couple of posters on the wall. One was Steve Martin, Best Fishes. He had that fish in his jacket.
Right.
But the other one was Chrissy Hynde, Get Close.
She's amazing.
I'm such a fan of hers. I've been a fan of hers for years.
Yeah.
I mean, she's just a staple. And still, even now, if Middle of the Road comes on the radio, I'm cranking it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there are certain songs, I don't care how many times I hear it. I'm going to crank it.
She was over here at the beginning of this year doing her new album.
Yeah. Oh, I love I love her cheap sunglasses, right? Or wait, what's it called?
She was just amazing. She played some of her old songs as well. And she just doesn't lose it.
Timeless. Yeah. Like an Annie Lennox.
Yeah,
timeless.
Exactly. So I'd already also gone out with some metal bands, you know, on tour. So I'd been on tour a lot, and coming from the studio, I realized that when you're on tour with someone, it's like being in the studio. If you don't have a role, if you're not there to work, you're in the way. And secondly, if you're not there to work, it's boring because there's a lot of waiting around time.
No, that's – yeah. It's like shooting, like we were saying. I mean, it's all – people don't understand, you know, people glamour of show business. They don't understand the sheer amount of not doing something and the sheer amount of boredom. And if you are doing something – you're doing it repetition. Right. You're doing it over and over and over. You're swinging or you're acting. You're saying the same words. You're doing the same jokes. You're doing the same look into the camera over and over and over again.
When you go on tour like this, the manager, like Elliot, does he tell you there are specific shots I want you to get? Is there a guideline? Is there
No, well, I guess from – so I picked up the camera because I wanted something to do.
I see. Okay.
Yeah, so that's when I picked up the camera. That's when I started doing photography. Mm.
And this is film, of course, way before digital.
No, 2009.
Oh, just now.
I picked up the camera in 2009.
I see.
So to start off with, Elliot's very protective of the people that he looks after, rightfully so. So he would tell me, you can't do this, you can't do that. And
like
and
what? That's What's totally an example cool. of?
Like no artist wants to have a camera stuck right up their nose.
Right.
They don't want to see you.
Right.
You know, that's.
Are you talking about backstage stuff?
No, anywhere.
Anywhere, okay.
Like even if you're in the front of in the pit.
Yeah.
Right in the front, they don't want to look down and you've got a camera lens right in the front of their face.
Right. You're just like supposed to be like a little fairy. Just do what you need to do and get the hell out.
Exactly.
Do you wear black? What do you wear?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Everyone wears black.
Right.
So what happens with me with so now Neil knows me well and he trusts me and Elliot trusts me. And I would never do anything with any of the clients or people I've ever worked with that would embarrass them or, you know, make them look bad.
If you would take an image that is not a good image or would embarrass them, do you delete it immediately or do you ever even show them pictures?
I never show them stuff.
They would never need to see that.
No, and I would never show anyone anything
so
like that.
So at the end of the day, do you show them 100 pictures or do you show them 50 pictures or do you show them 10 pictures? What do they want?
I'm not doing it for money.
I see.
So I go and shoot. And then when Elliot and Neil needed something for promotion or for they've used it for merch, then I just give them a bunch of photos.
I see.
So that was my payback.
Well, also your payback is you're able to use these images on your art.
So with everything that I use, I also make sure that Elliot has seen it first and, you know, he doesn't have a problem with it. But I also know his guidelines. I know what he doesn't like and what he won't have. I have to say the images on my scarves, so I started doing that in 2013 because I'd been around the world with Neil. The whole thing was traveling around the world, going to these amazing places. Also like places like Hawaii where both Elliot and Neil have got houses, so we'd go for holidays. So it wasn't just work, but I'd be going around the world, taking all these amazing photographs, and then going back to my place where I lived in London, to my garden, and that was like reflection time. So the photographs came from different places around the world, and they're not necessarily Neil Young pictures. I mean, I do have scarves that have Neil Young pictures, but I've got a lot of flowers and that I took with macros, and that was an amazing way to start seeing. So I've learned how to hear because I've trained my ear. And then this is when I started to actually see. By looking at something through a camera lens, and especially on a macro, you actually really zoom in. So all these things that you walk over every single day and you've totally forgotten about or you don't see anymore, you started to see again. And that's...
Are you saying the word macro as in lens?
Yes.
A macro lens?
Yes.
Is it a setting on the camera as well or it's just a lens?
I've got a lens.
And so you're talking about flowers, signs. What are you talking about?
Yeah, stuff on the street, you know, leaves with the...
You're saying
sun
tremendous detail.
Yeah.
On,
Julie,
tiny little
objects. You keep changing and evolving and you're such an artist. Yeah?
Apparently.
I think so.
You may be an accountant next year. I don't know. You go in a whole crazy new direction.
I don't think so. I can't see that happening.
What's your full-time? Where do you reside full-time?
Here in Los Angeles.
In Malibu.
Yes.
In Malibu. And you still have a place in London as well?
No, I gave that up last year. I moved.
Yeah. Oh, so now you're full time.
Yes, I am.
In USA. In the USA. Great.
But I have more Neil Young exhibitions that I'm going to do. So I did an exhibition of Neil Young at Warner's. Some of them I blew up to 6 foot. 65 inches times 82 inches, and I had to put it on canvas because it was too big for paper. But I've also got some smaller pieces. These are all available, and they're on my website, obscuradesigns.net, if anyone wants them.
You really do have a skill at capturing his essence specifically, because I've been such a fan of his for so long, and you really are able to capture it.
With Neil, he doesn't like photographers, and all the other photographers in when I was taking photographs, so everyone will come to the shows, but they're only allowed to have 3 songs and they're only allowed on sides. Mm. I can go wherever I like.
Really?
I can go right in the middle. Some of the photos that I've taken, Neil's actually come down on the side of the stage and sat right in front of me and looked straight in my lens.
Wow.
So I have this access with this person because he trusts me and he knows that I would never do anything that would not be great for him.
I have a song here I'd like you to take to Neil. I'm kidding. I don't have a
song.
Have
you ever photographed Neil Young writing music?
No.
Have you ever photographed him backstage?
Yes.
And on vacation and stuff like that.
Yes.
I mean, those are personal photos, obviously. That's not.
I have a lot of personal photos, which would always stay
of course.
Personal.
Do you have any favorite Neil Young songs? I'm just curious.
I loved Harvest.
Yeah.
I mean, who just doesn't? Yeah.
You know, one of my favorite songs is, though, of all time is Campaigner. Campaigner is like such an old school song, and I don't know. I bet he wrote that in 69, 70, and it still holds up. It's just that's the thing with his music. It holds up. It never goes away. It's
Neil's
timeless.
An amazing artist. He just keeps changing and pushing.
And I've seen
out
his
more.
Musicals. I saw his musical Greendale at the Greek Theater.
Also, last night, Human Highway aired, and it's going to air again through Fathom events.
Terrific. I didn't know that. His film, Neil Young's film, Human Highway.
So I'm consulting now for Fathom events.
How exciting.
And we're bringing in 8 titles of Neil's.
And so are there any wishes you have? Are there any musicians? I know you've worked in the studio with all these other musicians, but are there any other musicians you would really like to photograph?
Yes.
Who?
Red Hot Chili Peppers. I love, for me, it's not about just faces. I love movement. I love shape. And they jump around everywhere.
Yeah.
And I just
love... And
they're
naked, half naked, mostly naked.
I love the way they move. I mean, I've met them a number of times.
Yeah. Have you had relationships with guys in bands?
No.
Really?
Never.
So you're not a groupie?
No.
You're very business-oriented.
Yeah.
You're an artist.
I've had two businesses now.
Yeah, I know. So it's interesting, though, Julie, because you're an artist, very much an artist, right? I mean, just to look at you, you could see you're an artist. But then you've got this really strong... I can see you flip your switch when you are a businesswoman.
And I can tell you why I had to do that.
I know why you had to do it, because I was listening to you.
I was a woman in the 80s.
In the 80s, and all men around, right?
Yeah.
And so you were told not to question and just listen and absorb it and follow direction. But by doing that, you did learn, and now it's like you learned,
and now
you're leaving all these people in the dust.
I've been around Elliot Roberts, who's probably one of the best businessmen I've ever met. Most cunning.
How exciting.
Amazing businessman. And I've listened and I've looked and
you're
I've
so
learned.
Smart. Yeah. And to learn and to listen. Yeah. That's so smart. And so what else do you want to do? I mean, so what else? You want to photograph the Red Hot Chili Peppers. You're going to help out with this new movie, the film.
Yeah. I'm bringing in titles for different artists. To Fathom Events, which is owned by AMC, is it Cinemax and Regal?
So yeah, Fathom is pretty cool. They have a lot of the plays and stuff. They bring in all sorts of amazing broadcasts to movie theaters.
So I've got a number of people that I'm speaking to at the moment because I know a lot of managers, obviously.
Well, you are moving and shaking all the time, and I'm so happy you came to Storyworthy. This is really fun. You are
you're
a great example of pursuing your passion.
Thank you.
Because when you keep your nose down and you do what you need to do, things happen.
Yeah. They absolutely do, and you don't know the path that it's going to take you to. You know,
yeah, you
don't
never
know where it's going to end up.
Wow. Hey, man, you want to play some Shotgun Storyworthy?
Sure.
Music can only mean one thing. It's time for Shotgun Storyworthy.
The game where our storyteller spins the Storyworthy wheel of truth and tells a true 1-minute story about the topic it lands on.
So everybody, say it with me.
Spin that wheel.
Accidents. 96. So I used to love rollerblading. I could never roller skate, but I loved rollerblading. And then I got addicted to it because I'd go all around London and I'd go so far that I guess the natural endorphins or whatever happens was happening to me. So I'd get high. But I did it constantly. And then one day I fell over backwards. I did my least spectacular accident. I fell over backwards and I broke my ankle.
Ooh, good story. That's a nice clean story for Shotgun Storyworthy.
Yeah.
A rollerblading accident.
Right.
That's a great story.
And the worst thing that you could possibly think of, breaking your ankle.
Yeah, well, that's interesting. Usually when you're rollerblading or roller skating, it's more of a wrist injury because you land on your hands.
Didn't that happen to you?
Yeah, I did that skiing though. When you were rollerblading, you were always padded
but
up and
this
stuff.
This was like, I had really spectacular crashes.
Yeah.
And nothing happened, but I just fell over backwards and I broke my ankle.
Standing still,
yeah.
fell over.
Yeah.
Yeah, that you should make up a better story than that, man. You should make it. I was going down.
Now, Neil Young pushed you backwards over a rock.
I was on the stage shaking a picture.
I can't blame Neil. I didn't know him then.
There's got to be something more interesting than that.
Johnny Cash pushed me over a rock.
Thank you so much. Really, we're really happy you came today. And it's fascinating.
Thank you.
And your art is stunning. So again, you guys, check out Julie Gardner at obscuredesigns.net. I'd like to thank everybody here at Sideshow Network, especially Maria Spertolozzi. Thanks, Maria. You're so quiet today. You know, but what she's doing, she's listening. It's not really her voice. It's her ability to listen.
Her ears are enormous.
By the way, Julie, have you ever lost any hearing due to all the concerts you've been to?
I'm really careful. I always wear hearing protectors.
Earplugs. Yeah. Well, it's very smart. That's a tip for the kids.
Always.
The kids today.
I'd also like to thank Sean Merrick here at Sideshow Network and Roddy Swearingen and, of course, John Thomas Griffith. John Thomas Griffith wrote the theme song, Follow Me.
Yes, he did, but he has never had his photograph taken by Julie Gardner.
Not that. You know what?
Not yet.
There's a band for you to follow, yeah. Cowboy Mouth. That's a great band for you to follow.
Cool.
And on behalf of our storyteller tonight, Julie Gardner, again, thank you for coming to the show.
Thank you.
And on behalf of you, Hannes Finney, my dear friend and co-host, my name is Christine Blackburn, saying, make it a story-worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.
That made no fucking sense whatsoever. No fucking sense at all.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years. One of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.